Land acknowledgements are often presented in shared spaces where we gather in person, but on a podcast, we recognize that each one of us occupies space on Indigenous land. We call on you, our listeners, to acknowledge that Indigenous people are the original inhabitants and caretakers of this land and have distinctive and sovereign rights and responsibilities that are directly connected to land, community, culture, and knowledge. With this in mind, please take the time to find out what territory you are on at native-land.ca and make a move to support our amazing Indigenous firecrackers like Jennifer Podemski, Marie Clements, Jules Kustachin, Tamara Podemski, Tracy Deer, and so many more. Let me ask you a question. Do you like to laugh? And if you said no, I don't know who you are. Are you a robot? Are you a robot listening to this podcast? That's incredible. First of all, the robots are taking over the world. If you love to laugh, I've got a great new series called Got MILF. And just so you know, MILF stands for Millions of Individuals Laughing Forever. So put that in your back pocket. Got MILF is a series of 18 sketches created, written, and produced by comedian Susan Serrero. She's a scream. She's got all these different characters, and each sketch is entirely different and such smart points of view. It's a female-driven sketch comedy series that really shines a light on the deep, dark crevices of the female psyche. MILF is a sexualized term, obviously, for women in their 30s, 50s, and it's a limited description of a woman's worth, isn't it? It is. Through these sketches, Got MILF likes to mess with people's perceptions of what sexy is and showcase that women are complex and interesting humans by focusing on the humor in the everyday lives. And sometimes, I mean, most of the times, ridiculous situations that we find ourselves in because life is ridiculous. And somehow Susan Serrero captures it in this series. So Got MILF, it's currently available on YouTube at Got MILF Sketches and also Susan Serrero Sketch Series. You're going to want to go over there, especially if you like to laugh. And if you don't like to laugh, you're a robot. Turn yourself off. Now, here's the thing that you get to do when you have your own company. You get to just choose who you talk to. And that makes me being able to reach out to folks like our guest today. So I mean, I can't even hide it anymore. I'm so like excited and nervous because I have such deep admiration for this actor, not only as a human being, but as an artist and as a firecracker, spitfire. If you know her, you'll be like, yeah, this is a no-brainer. She should be on the show. All right, it's Maria Del Mar. I don't even think that's a surprise because if you're tuning in, you should see it. Maria Del Mar, hi.
Hi, wow, thanks for the great intro.
Well, barely. I have to say that I was going to go into all the credits that you've had in case folks like have been under a rock and don't know who you are. But then I was like, oh, that'll be the hour that we want to talk. Here's the thing. I went to your IMDb and it was like back in the day of Street Legal and ENG and then Tech War and Blue Murder, 24. You're like, that's one of my favorite series of all times, 24, 100%. And then like, I'm sure there's a couple of projects in there that are dear to your heart, like
Frasier.
Oh my God. But I was going to say Touch of Grey.
Oh, Touch of Grey was so much fun.
Right. Yeah. And then Hudson Rex more recently. And then the Lego Dreams that you're doing, the Trials of the Dream.
Oh yeah, that's right. Cases. So yeah, that is a great story. I, for some reason, when I first started acting, I was basically all TV film, right? TV film. And I really didn't monopolize the possibility to flourish in voice, in the voice arena.
Yeah.
So, and it felt like it was really hard to bust in there. It's like, guys, let me in.
Yeah, you know? People say that. They say it's like a bit of a clique.
Yeah,
right?
And so that made me really cranky for a long time. So I'd just go on the occasional voice gig knowing that I wasn't going to get it at all. But now we go into like characters, like really wackadoodle characters.
Yeah.
The same reason that we ended up going into acting in the first place, right?
Right. You didn't go into it to be like yourself. You went into it to be like these characters, right?
Absolutely. To be that 12-year-old girl in front of the TV with my brother and his friends, and we'd all take different characters, right? And the cartoons and talk to each other as we would make up all these voices. Yes. So, so much fun.
Yes.
Also, it's time-wise and effort-wise about the most I can do right now. So
The fact that you're here with me looking like Gloria Swanson in all her glory, I'm thrilled. I just, honestly, I've known you forever, but I'm just so thrilled. Like, this is the thing with Firecracker Department is I get to have you for this chunk of time.
Right.
And we can go wherever we want to go in the discussion.
Perfect.
And I love it. I'm so thrilled to have time with you.
Me too.
Yeah, like your energy must be all over the place with what you're dealing with.
Energy is all over the place. I just went through a second round of chemo. The first round I went through, I had 30 radiations and then a little bit of chemo, but it came back. Not only did it come back, but I got another type of cancer along the way when
it came.
So I got breast cancer, a different type of cancer. And then it jumped from, you know, one lung to the other across my lymph nodes, which is not good, right? Once they hit the lymph nodes, you know,
I don't know.
I've thought about this so much and
I don't know how to make sense of this stuff.
No. And here's the thing is that, it was curative treatments mm-hmm. that we were seeking out at the beginning. They told me it's curative, mm-hmm. but because of COVID and the lockdowns and everything else that happened, it went from curative to not being curative.
Jesus.
So, yeah. You know, but they don't tell you that. They only answer questions you ask, but if you don't have information, how do you know what questions to ask? It's pretty bizarre. It's pretty bizarre.
Yeah. And then here's the other flip to the logic of stupid cancer is that it could flip back.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
The only thing you can do is exactly what you're doing, which is
trying to live.
Yeah. Like from my perspective, you're putting yourself out there. You're dealing with things on a day-to-day basis. You're not trying to, I don't know. I mean, I had like a little cancer 10 years ago. I had skin cancer, but it was like
melanoma.
Yeah. And it wasn't like, I didn't have to do any treatment for it. So, but it's still like when the word cancer comes into the discussion in a doctor's office, it's not like, oh, that's nothing. Like, it's not like, you know, a hangnail that needs to be treated. Like, it's something that sits on you for the rest of your life. And more so, I think, for you, probably.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of people that feel that they need to hide it or to disguise it or to, you know, minimize it because it scares people.
Mm-hmm.
Death scares people. And understandably, we don't talk about it in our society. We don't talk about it in our community, in our country. Death is something that happens. It's a horrible, ugly end result that all of us are going to go through, and we still don't talk about it. You know?
It's like there's certain people that are like, oh, that's your problem. I shan't be doing that. I won't be crossing over. Like,
I'm opting out.
That's right. Yeah. No, I think, no, thank you. Yeah.
I'm opting out.
That's right. But then you're like, you come from like Spain, which I feel like at least they address grief and death.
Yeah. Well,
I come from British territory, which if you start
it.
Crying, there's like a people pull out puppets. And they're like, what can I do to distract you? Like a marching band comes in.
That's right. That's hilarious. My husband is British, actually. My ex-husband is British. I come from Spain and Venezuela. So I was actually born in Madrid, in Spain, but my parents are 100% Latinos.
You don't have, you're not telling Latino. Us anything you don't know. Yeah. Look at you. Are you kidding me?
I don't understand, you know, after 20 years in the industry a while back ago, people were still saying, Maria Del Mar, you're Spanish? It's
like, come on. She's not from Brampton, for God's
That's
sake.
That's right. Crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so people were shocked.
People were shocked, and I did not want to have to comfort everybody as they found out.
You know, I heard your podcast, and I heard that too, and I have to tell you, I had the exact same thing. Because I didn't tell my parents.
Yeah.
I didn't want to look after them looking after me.
And it's usually, you know, way over the top, right? Especially, you know, family and friends and the curiosity and everything else. So I made the choice to go public with it so that I don't have to take your phone calls, so that I don't have to bring you comfort, because I got to deal with this. I got to deal with my own stuff here. So, and that may sound sort of cold and callous, but it wasn't intended to be. It was, equal opportunity. Everybody can know at the same time. Yeah. I'm telling you all the same thing. And yeah, yeah. Now I got to deal with whatever comes next, which inevitably did, of course. So
listen, I admire the way you're handling it because it suits you. Mm. Right? Like it works for your system and how you're dealing. And so if it didn't, then you wouldn't. Yeah. And maybe there'll be a time in the future that you're like, I'm done with being public. I need to just, this is just for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm so curious about how this chapter of life, you're sitting with it, because I think you're right about death. I think you're right about in our industry, like your perspective of art must have flipped in the last year, not only with cancer, but with your son passing away. Like it must have just gone boom. No?
Yeah. And I mean, my son's death was something 20 times worse for me than 20 million times worse than my own ailments. But the irony is that I had done a 10-part miniseries for, I think what's HBO Canada now or something. I did a 10-part miniseries playing a woman who goes through cancer.
Terminal, right? Terminal City?
Terminal City, yeah. And I have now officially lived those scenes out.
Isn't that nuts?
And with Gil, you know, Gil comes into town and we see each other and he just looks at me and he's like, no, you know, like what?
What the fuck?
So bizarre, especially getting breast cancer, because that's what that character ended up dying with. But, you know, they were very clever. I had no idea, but they used real doctors and they, you know, to make it look as realistic as possible. And the sounds were even jarring, you know, when we were filming it, because I didn't know what to expect, which is sort of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I got caught in the exact same scene in real life where, you know, the sounds clack, you know, they're taking liquid from your breast. They're taking a sample. And I was living, you know, my life had become something that I had done for artistic reasons.
Isn't that wild?
So it made me a little crazy, but it also brought about a very dark, funny side to me.
Yeah, because you've got to, right? Like, that's the other thing about grief and trauma, that if we don't have like jokes right next to it,
forget it.
It's just not real.
No, it's too much.
It's not real.
COVID came. I was diagnosed with cancer. I was treated for cancer. I was given radiation and chemo. Then they performed surgery and removed, it's called a lobectomy. They removed a lobe from my right lung. And then we sat and waited. And then my mother died.
Right.
And then I got cancer again, plus a different cancer. And then my son was killed. And my ex-husband had a stroke.
It's not real.
It's
it's not even like, if you sent that as a first draft, the directors would come back like, it's a bit much.
No.
Yeah, it's a bit over the top.
It's a bit over the top. So I've come up with some fabulous, artistically, it's liberating. It's like, what are they going to do? Hate it? Yeah, big shit. You know, I'm really not that interested.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell me about the shift artistically, because for me, like I looked at your career and I think of like you have been one of the most consistently working actors. Mm-hmm. Like if you look back in the Street Legal days, I'm just like, oh, you were just, to me, when I saw you on Street Legal and ENG, I was like, oh, you're just it. You're what I would aspire to be because of the strength of your characters, but all of the presence that you had in our community was huge.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I don't know. I've been really blessed, but I think it also took all of this tearing my world literally apart. I have to continue to live. So it's forced me to live and to make hay or make the best of it, because I have a 20-year-old daughter.
Yeah. She's extraordinary, by the way. I had a fantastic discussion with her at your son's funeral.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because I was like, I need, like, because first of all these kids were so cool there, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to just, because I didn't meet Gabriel.
Gabriel.
I didn't meet him before.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to know what he was like. So I asked your daughter, and she was hilarious. She's so funny. I'm going to cry thinking about it, because I can imagine, you know, like she was, I was like, what's he like? And she was like, well, he was a bit of an asshole. And I was like, exactly. But exactly. If that is it, like.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Then, but then, and she went on telling about how emotional about it, because it's, I have a brother as well, but about their relationship, their partnership. It's like nothing else. And
nothing else.
You got quite a gem in that kid.
Yeah. And that's all they had was each other, right? I mean, they have cousins, but the cousins grew up in different cities and so forth. And I, you know, I grew up pretty close with my brother. So he has a daughter that's 1 year older than Paloma, who's also at McGill, where my daughter goes. So they've become friends. They went and volunteered in Ecuador along the Amazon to volunteer for this doctor's organization that's done through McGill. It isn't Doctors Without Borders. It's just a tiny little troop that goes in. Mm-hmm. They spend a week in there with small little kids, trying to get them engaged with their own health or whatever it may be. And then they come out. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. So she's a pretty spectacular individual. So I can't give up on life with her. I can't. Yeah. And I think I was slowly going down that way psychologically, you know, because I'm close to Paloma for very different reasons than I'm close to Gabriel. And Gabriel would never be able to replace the loss of Paloma, and Paloma will never be able to replace my loss of Gabriel. So
no, but
it's so much.
It's so much. But
it's just,
yes, no, but it's just so much. And I'm grateful to have this discussion, because, you know, we don't get this kind of insight, you know, when you talk about grief, when you talk about like the shitstorm that you've been dealt, and then how, you know, they say like turning your broken heart into art.
Yeah.
But how?
I've got one.
You got it? Oh, you got it.
I've got it. Two of them. And it's because of the absurdity of what I'm going through. Are you kidding me? Are you, this is happening to, is everybody watching? Because if I go home and tell people, they're not going to believe this is happening to me.
No, they'll be like, give me another draft. Not so traumatic.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So it's a comedy.
Of course it is.
Because it's, my situation is so absurd. I came up with a scenario that sounds absurd, but it's completely fantastic. So you and I should talk about that some point.
I'd love to. I already want to call it. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would love to 100%.
Yeah. So that, and for years I've been threatening to do a little one woman show called One Spectacular Canadian, Another Immigrant Story.
Yes. No brainer. That's like 100%.
The spic part needs to be highlighted. One Spectacular Canadian. Yeah.
But I mean, in the, like, we've had this discussion, or my husband and I have talked about art. And, you know, we don't have kids. And both my parents died in 2020, not because of COVID, but just it all happened at the same time.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But gosh, mine's a walk in the park in compares to yours.
No, that's not true. People suffer, they suffer. You know, shouldn't be compared.
And you're not slowing down. You've got ideas.
Oh,
I just love that.
I do. I just have to put them on paper.
Yeah.
It's the remoteness of it all, right? It's just sort of random, the randomness of everything that sort of happens, you know? I literally was hobbling down the stairs, you know, one at a time, holding on to the railing, you know, with both my hands, trying to normalize my breathing. And it just fell into my head, and I couldn't stop laughing. I was just giggling all the way down. And then I live with my best friend, and I told her about it. And she was like, oh my God, Ray, you have to do that. You just have to do it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to talk about that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. So then looking back to, like, you know, if I'm looking back to the days of when you're booking things like Fraser, right? Where you think like, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, can you kind of, like, give me a flash I don't know. I'd love to see like the juxtaposition of like the Maria Del Mar then and the Maria Del Mar now, and how you're sort of, you're the same person, but you're adapting, you know?
Right. And so it's so interesting, right? Because Frasier is one of the most insignificant roles I've had in my life. But of course, that's what people pay attention to, right?
Yeah.
I think the Maria Del Mar back then was really hopeful, like really hopeful, and loved watching foreign films all Saturday morning and had no ceiling. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no ceiling to the possibilities for us. So I was filled with hope and my career was going really well in Los Angeles. I was booking stuff one, bang, bing, bam, bing, bing, bam, bing, bing, bam, boom. So it was like great. But it was a difficult time because my husband, who was a writer, was not booking stuff in Los Angeles and did not have, you know, the same luck that I was having. So now I'm divorced, so there's no concern there. I'm probably twice as loaded and capable as an actress as I was back then.
100%.
Because we live, and it's through our own personal experiences that we draw to be able to give the audience a correct reflection of what was intended, right, for the character. Mm-hmm. So the more you live, the more you witness, the more you feel, the more you partake in, it's like my well is full.
Yeah.
And of course, ageism and women is brutal.
Yeah.
It's just brutal. My daughter reads off statistics to me, and she wants to become an actress. And I'm like, it's not for the faint of heart.
No.
I mean, it's got to be a calling. It's not a, oh, that might be fun. You know, it's
no, no. Oh my gosh, the people are like, I just try that for a change. Yeah. I got some extra time.
Exactly.
Ego is feeling a little bit too fortified. I think I'm going to try acting.
Exactly. Yeah, I need to be slammed down for, you know, the next 6 months of my life. So I feel I have more. I'm more present. Of course, it makes sense, right? But the more present you are, the better your work, you know, the more authentic, the more we get to donate to that piece of art that we're working on, you know, to revel in that character or that bit of art, or that bit of really shitty written show, you're still going to give it your best, right?
Well, this is it. What are you going to do? Like, dial yourself down?
You got to give it, you got to work twice as hard to make it look better, right?
So. Yeah. So you're talking about being present. I'd love to hear like a little bit about your process. It sounds, I don't think we talk about process enough. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like, you know, it's sort of this unspoken, I don't know, Voldemort, or I don't know.
Yeah, like, mystery. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But like when you talk about being present, like I feel like that's so essential, but it's so much easier said than done, obviously.
Yes, absolutely. And it has to work with whoever you're working with, right? So it has to jive. You have to be on the same note, or you have to be, I just recently did a, I think I'm allowed to talk about it now. One of those shows that you're not supposed to talk about.
So you can talk about it. And if you find out you're not allowed to, we'll edit.
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
So I did Star Trek actually less than a year ago. Anyway, I did it. And I think because I've been so removed and dealing with this stuff, I sort of wandered onto set. And it was the sweetest thing that people came up and said, oh, Maria Del Mar, I know you from this, or I know you from that. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of startled because in my head, I've been so far removed from my art, right? And then it was like, okay, I'm on. I'm allowed to do this the way I would like to do this. I was playing somebody's a very soft, warm character, which is odd for that show. And I sort of took a look at the person that was supposed to be playing a relative, and you know, we started chatting, and immediately there was a bond that happened, and so we just stayed within that,
yeah,
within that relationship, and it was perfect because I got to play, and it was decided, and it was okay. Do you know what I mean? He was so accepting, and he was so giving, and he was so. You know, sometimes you throw a ball and the Doberman, instead of reaching for it or trying to grab it with his mouth, will literally duck and watch the ball go by, you know, and then you're left going.
Right. That somebody's not interested in connecting, or they're scared.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So it was really lovely. And you know how it is with series. They're fast. You have to go. There's not that much time to be that creative and that thoughtful, right?
Yeah.
So you've got to make some decisions before you go there.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'd like to do. And even if it's just a general idea of what you would like to present, right? And then you remain open, because it's quite possible that the other person in the scene with you, or in the scenes with you, or in the episode with you, have better ideas.
Yeah.
So look, I don't care whose idea it is. If it's going to elevate the scene, the quality of the art, let's go with it,
yeah.
Right? So it's tricky. It's almost like dancing salsa, except you're always the woman, you know? You're always waiting to see what the trick is, and you got to follow,
right?
Right?
Yeah, that's interesting, though, with the idea of coming in with choices, right? So
yes.
I'm going to make some choices, and I'm also going to throw those all out the door as soon as I step on set, because I have to be aware of the DNA of the day, right? Like, what? Let's say I make a choice that I'm like, I'm going to be like a forthright, but I come in and I've had like a hard morning, and I'm grieving, and actually I'm super vulnerable. So I have to add that to the forthright person, right? Like, it's
right.
Like, I don't know. Like, what's your balance between choices and
layered?
Yeah, and.
Layered. What I try to do, especially if the character is written really well and she's layered and she's like the rest of us humans, a ball of contradictions,
yes,
right?
100%, 100%.
You've got to find the place, the time within the arc of your character, or you're working that character, to expose those things. Because that's the one thing that pulls us away from being a one-dimensional character. It's the one thing that saves us from looking like flat pancakes, you know? What I do is I'll go through the scenes and I'll try to figure out, okay, so she's like, this character is sick, but she's trying to remain happy for her daughter. So we've got to see a bit of that effort when it's not easy. Just to show that that's so important to her.
Yeah.
We've got to show that she is grieving very privately, and or not, you know, or give her that moment where she just starts to fall apart before a scene even starts. Do you know what I mean? Or choose a moment where she's lost for a beat, and then catches back. You know what? And most TV shows will give you a little bit of play, you know, to just add an or whatever it may be, that can tell a million things about the pain that this woman is going through, right? And trying to hide it. So I know.
Oh,
right?
I love it. I love our job so much.
So you get to scatter the different qualities, the different characteristics and contradictions about the character. You try to find within her scenes in this episode, where can I display this? Where can I throw this? When can I pepper this?
Yeah.
And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes the director gets it and sometimes the director doesn't. And sometimes it was a great attempt, but it just sucked, right? But at least you're bringing, you've got to do something to lift those words off the page in a way that makes it better. That's what I'm always conscientious of, trying to lift those words off the page and make it better, make it better, make it something that makes people feel, you know? Mm. Yeah.
I love that so much. No, I love it. Like, was there one of your projects that stands out as like one of those, I want to say life-changing projects, but I feel like those come in different ways, like not in the career sense, but in the artistic sense.
I think Terminal City was pretty huge because they allowed me to really create that character in ways that she was not created on paper.
Right. So what did that process look like? Did you sit down with a director and be like, this is what I'm thinking, I want to create it this way? Or did you just come in and start throwing things out there?
Oh, yeah. We had, because it was a 10-part miniseries, we had different directors, right?
Right, of
so
course.
I had been in the industry long enough to know that if I start tracking down these directors and telling them what I would like to do with my character, they're all just going to go, yeah, sure. No, you're scaring me. Don't do that. Right. So a lot of the times I would just allow it to happen. And thank God that Gil and I had such a great working relationship that we could bounce off each other like that, you know?
Yes.
So whether it was a sneaky look or whether it was a, oh fuck, I really don't want to have to deal with these kids right now, or whether it was, you know, sadness because she had terminal cancer, we got to play. And that's magical, right? Is the playing element.
Yeah, it's almost like everything we're talking about is all the things you do to prepare the sandbox, like to give yourself like the line memorization, the thought profound, the chemistry connection,
right.
And then everything gets thrown out and you just dance the salsa.
Yeah, exactly. And if there isn't any chemistry there, too bad, sister, you fake it. It's called acting. You get it out. You do whatever you do need to do that you give off a, not to turn him on, but that you are chemically perfect for this.
Turned on.
For this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, you get, and as you get older, that toolbox gets bigger and bigger, right?
Yeah.
Bigger and bigger. And I think all our emotions are much more easily accessible because they're bigger. Because as we age, we start understanding what loss is, what true loss is, right? We're exposed to a lot more of it. I mean, my father died when I was 12, so I knew loss really young.
Yeah.
But as we get to this age, you know, when our parents and our friends' parents and our own peers are coming down with wackadoodle diseases and et cetera, it's a different kettle of fish than when you're, you know, 30 and hanging out in LA going, oh, I can't believe how easy this is. You know?
Like your biggest problem is like, what do you want to have for lunch?
Exactly. Where do you want to go? Yeah.
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 Do you miss Los Angeles at all? What were you like there? What was Maria Del Mar like in Los Angeles?
Oh, very hopeful.
I don't, you can see that again. I see the same kind of hope though. Like from what we talked about earlier with your cancer and with your daughter and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that hope is too far away.
Yeah. I don't like being told no to. And I don't care that I've never done it before. I have to do it first. I have to do it at some point, right?
Yeah.
So people say, oh, but you know, do you have experience in this? No, I didn't have experience acting either. I bullshit my way into this whole industry and here I am. So there you go.
Did you really? Did you like stumble?
Totally.
How did you bullshit your way in?
Okay, I think you're the first person I've told
on
a podcast.
It stays here. Nobody else
will
know.
Yeah, exactly. No. I had always wanted to be an actor. I came from a family. My father was a diplomat, and my mother and father basically just told us, well, doctor, lawyer, engineer type thing, right?
Right.
So there's six of us, six kids.
Wow.
And then my father passed away when I was 12. And so the youngest boy was 16 and I was 12 when my dad passed. And everyone in my family had an artistic bent. And like every single one of us, whether it's sketching, painting, music, a lot of music. Going to acting schools in Ottawa, I don't think was probably viable. And I remember telling my mom, Mom, but I really want to be an actor. And she was like, well, if you really want to be an actor, you have to go to Juilliard and we'll have to, you know, borrow some money from the family back in Venezuela. And I was like, no, that's not happening. I don't want that. So I found a brochure, and it was the International Film and Television Workshop in Maine. And I thought, wow, there's going to be like real people doing real right. things
there. Wait, were you in Ottawa at the time?
Yeah, I grew up in Ottawa.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so so I filled out this sheet and sent it away. And anyway, so I was accepted. So now I'd really done it, right? Because everybody's sitting in a circle and talking about what they studied, whether it was Stanislavski or whether it was Uta Hagen. No, I'm more of a Meisner, you know, the whole thing. And I was like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah,
like,
you're like,
no idea.
Like a little Uta, a little Stannis.
A little bit of each, I find it's nice to have in your toolbox. So I lied, blatantly lied my way in. And then we got to work with the directors that were there studying the directing workshop. And then from that, they asked three of us to stay to work with the directors. So we got free lodging, free food, free everything else to be available for the directors. Right. So I was all excited. And I went to the guy, the director, Michael Pressman, who was teaching the directing workshop. And I told him the truth. I said, do you think if I were to apply to go to art school, like, do you think it'd be worth it? And he looked at me and he said, forget it. Just move to Toronto and start working.
Get to work.
So literally, wow. That's what I did. I moved to Toronto. Yeah. I did do my research. Yeah. I mean, I did, you know, I was a student throughout all of this. Right. So I took, I think, two workshops, and I hated them both. And I felt like I was being manipulated like crazy. This was the 80s, right?
Yeah. It's dodgy town.
Oh, man. Dodgy town. If it's a man and you know, if it's a woman, she had her little private pets, the girls that she would go and hang out with after the class. And, you know, and it was like, you were making me feel good about this choice of mine. But it was on set. I learned everything I know on set, just watching and trying new shit. And I was also fascinated. I've always been fascinated with old films and old movies. And, you know, as a kid, I used to stay home and not go to school and watch movies. I liked, it's just something I loved and always wanted to do and never thought that it would be possible. So, right. Yeah, really lucky.
And did you ever like have a moment where you were like,
they're going to catch on?
No. Because did you start working right away in Toronto, or like, was there a moment where you're like, oh?
It was pretty quick. Like, it was pretty quick. Yeah. Like, within a year, I was working, right? And, and you know, like, get on your mark. And I didn't know who the fuck Mark was. And you know where. You know, somebody calling me Miss Del Mar. That's hilarious to me.
Oh, yeah. Fancy.
It was pretty quick. And then I landed, I mean, I got stuff like Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at my roommate going, what's Kids in the Hall? And she was like, what are you talking about?
How do you not know? I know.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
So a lot of that happened, right? So I've been really lucky. Like, I've been really lucky.
Yeah. I think that's a combo of luck and talent when you're in the right place and your tools and your passion, right? Like, there's obviously.
Yeah. And you stand to learn something from everyone you work with.
Everything, everyone. Like, you can exhaust yourself with how you can learn in one day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, what better way to go to school is to be there, you know, I'm on set, I'm in the scene, I'm in a scene with Alfre Woodard. That was my first gig, I think. I was in awe, and she was so lovely, and she looked at me and she said, what are you doing here? Go, you should go to LA. I'm like, okay. I think I'm over to that, you know? Yeah. So people have been very kind. I've worked with a lot of people that were not very kind.
Sure.
But but that happens, right? And that's what, that can also decide how you will behave with other people in the future.
Yeah,
right?
Agreed.
So I think if you're kind and if you're cooperative and if you're open and if you allow yourself to be creative with somebody, then the quality of the project is just going to elevate, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I want to know what your take on the ageism that we're dealing with, because we recognize it, right? So it's one thing to recognize it, and it's one thing to go, okay, so it's not great. It's better, don't you think? I would say it's better than 10, 20 years ago.
Sure.
But what do we do? Like, what do you think is a good step to do in order to make some changes in the, I would say, especially the female presenting ageism that's going on?
I think we write more scripts that are bent that way, that lean towards having a proper, realistic representation of a slice of our society. Do you know what I mean? And that does not eliminate women after the age of 45 or 50 or whatever it may be. It's so crazy. We're a group of clients that have spending dollars. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yes, 100%. We
This
have power,
demographic
right?
has power.
I
It
know.
didn't used to. They didn't think it used to. I've got a great story about that. So I filmed a mockumentary that I wrote, directed, and produced with a girlfriend of mine, and we shot it over the weekend. From that, we were offered by three different producers to put it into development, right? So
Yeah.
I'm like, great, okay.
What is it called?
Flit. It's a mockumentary, and it involves nine women.
Love it.
So I had three different producers approach me they want to go into development, blah, blah, blah. I was like, holy crap, this is great. By the time I got to the head of CBC at the time, I was asked, where am I going to find eight other funny women in Canada?
Oh my gosh.
Are you
What?
kidding me? Are you
What?
kidding? Like,
That's
we
outrageous.
import them to the USA, for God's sake. Come
That's
on.
it.
It was so offensive that I sought out a journalist from a paper to write about it, and they were all part of the same media corporation,
Right.
so he didn't do anything. It was crazy.
Oh,
It was crazy.
yeah.
And that was a really bad deterrent for a while. So now you understand that primary female casts can do incredibly well. How about we not make them all little sex bots?
Yeah,
You
right.
know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it even goes further than just the writing and the acting. Like, I feel like crew. Like, I want to
Oh, yeah.
I was on set the other day, and there was like a lot of the crew members were older women. And when I say older women, I'm saying like not 20, so
Right.
like 30s, 40s, 50s. But the longevity, right, of the then the wealth of knowledge that women
Absolutely.
crew members have, because I guarantee you, no, I don't guarantee anything, but I bet you a lot of these women have not only gone through crew life, which is way harder than acting and anything else, but they've gone through crew life and also had a family and balanced that. So like they're dynamic.
Yeah, this is where I bring up my bestie, who is nominated for two Emmys and two DGC awards this year. And she does a lot of helping up, putting a hand out to help somebody else
Can you
up
say
along
her
the
name,
same.
or you did you sign an NDA?
Jill Purdy. She's
Oh yeah, of course.
yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
and she makes the conscious choice to help out other women. And it's
Yeah.
interesting because we've done a couple of tiny projects together just to sort of get our feet wet. And some of the women that were students that we got grabbed from Humber College are now doing things on their own and in the industry
Yeah.
and working successfully. It's crazy. It's sad that this hasn't ha that this took so long to get here, you know?
Aren't you a little bit, this is going to sound like something that I'm going to get letters about, but
Yeah.
aren't you a little bit grateful for Trump? Don't you think? Because I feel like before that I was like, we're doing fine. We're growing. And then that happened. I went,
Yeah, that was a
oh, we aren't
huge
as advanced.
no. And yeah, I think because he's such a disgusting human being, such a corrupt mind, I think the explosions, the Me Too explosion, the Black Lives Matters, the all those things had to come up because we all lived in a world where, well, that's the way it is on set. You're cute, and they know it, and they're gonna tell you. and maybe what they want to do too, you know. And it's like, no, that's not okay. None of this is okay. And it was a brutal world back then.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Directors had no hesitation to yell, scream at you, and embarrass and humiliate you in front of the crew. And
yeah. No, that's changed. That has
Thank
changed.
Thank God,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Thank God.
So what do you think then? What's the, you know, I mean, you're allowed to just look fancy in your scarves and shirts, but what is the thing that you want to be doing next? What's the thing that, if there was a team of people around you to lift you up to what you need to do?
There's a series that has to be made. It's a series that has to be made. It has pathos, but it's also dark comedy, and it gets people talking about stuff that, you know, normally isn't spoken about.
Yeah.
I think that's my mission. And I want it to go. I think it's important. I think it's important because it brings in every type of human that we see in our communities, in our societies, right? Because it involves death and everybody's going to die. So,
I know.
You know.
I know.
You know.
It's okay. We know.
Right.
We know. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I really love chatting with you. And I think I'm so excited to have like your voice amongst the voices in our community too. And
thank you. I appreciate it. It makes me feel good knowing you're out there doing all this stuff.
Oh, you know, I mean, now, unfortunately, you've been brought into the fold, Maria. So you think that this is by myself? I think
we
have a meeting next week already. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, you've been leading the charge for a long time. And it's always been good to know that you're out there, you know, kicking at the piñata, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't hit the piñata because it's too hard. I pull it down and then I just kick it. Way easier.
See?
Yeah.
Smart girl.
Smart.
Clever, clever
But
woman.
I will say this too, that I can't, you know, like whatever I'm doing now couldn't have been done without folks like you.
Yeah.
Like it's just not possible, because even like if nothing is nothing, like you played roles that had power and you played roles that you made choices. And that was something that I didn't see enough of. So those kind of things planted seeds that led me to be where I am today.
I did. It's very funny. I did consciously decide that I wasn't going to be playing any screaming, running, you know, women in lingerie in a horror flick, and that that my characters had to resonate with me. You know, they had to mean something. It had to be about something a little deeper than just, you know, I am.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So I played a lot of ball busting characters, which was a lot of fun for a long time. But what was so funny is that my agent used to say all the time, "You are such a goof. Like, how do people even buy you being serious?" That's interesting.
This is the time. This is to let your goof fly now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's part of the series that I want to do. So,
all right, we're going to talk more about this.
Yeah.
Can I wrap it up? We do a bunch of firecracker questions that I ask everybody, and I'll ask you them as well.
Yes.
And you don't have to be fast. You just, and you can't be wrong. It's the easiest thing in the world. Fill in the blank to me, a firecracker is
a forward moving fighter.
Nice. What do you want to be best known for?
Aside from my two children, creativity, I think, generosity of spirit, hopefully, you know.
I love it. You can't not, like, honestly, you can't not be in the same room as you and know that you're an artist. Right?
Really?
It's true.
So I'm loud-mouthed?
I don't know. No, I don't think it's about your loud-mouthedness. I think it's about your presence. I think it's about your presence.
Thank you.
What's something that people don't know about you?
Well, I think I told you that I'd never studied acting.
Yeah, the secret's out. Right.
Whoops.
You're going to get like all your past credits being like, you promised us.
I've got over 30 years now in this, so I'm in deep. I don't think there's any huge mysteries about me. I was going to say that I'm crazy sensitive, but we're a bunch of actors. We're a bunch of
artists.
Yeah,
what are we going to do?
Exactly.
Can you imagine if you weren't? You wouldn't be the artist you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a favorite mistake And I say that thinking that we learn from our mistakes, that they're not actual mistakes. But do you have a favorite thing that you've done that was classified as a mistake?
Oh God, how many? Favorite mistake.
Yeah, that one. Whatever you're laughing about, I want to know about that one.
I'm shooting 24 in Los Angeles. And we go off set just to run the scene. There was myself, there was the director, and there was Kiefer Sutherland. And he was not happy because the scenes felt really heavy and like nothing was going on, right? Previous to what we had done. So he said, so we ran the scene that we were about to do, and he threw in some lines, some extra ad libs, right? And so I was like, oh, okay, ad lib, well, no problem. So we went back in and we went to shoot it, and I took all of his ad lib lines.
Oh my gosh.
And he literally looked at me and he said, those were my ad libs. And I said, and I said, yeah, well, I don't know enough about this to actually go freestyling here, so I thought I might just use yours and you could riff off those. He was like looking at me like, oh my God.
I love it. I love it because they're in your brain already. Like they're already percolating.
Exactly.
I love it. What's something that you haven't done yet, but you know you have to do?
I have to direct more.
Agreed. 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 Yeah.
I do love it, and I think that's a natural for me,
Yeah.
for sure.
Okay, what is the best advice you ever got and the worst advice you ever got?
Oh, just give up.
Right?
Just
Right.
give up. There's that advice, and the best advice was
Yeah.
hang in there, staying
Yes.
for the long haul. You know, you got to do your 10,000 hours.
I think it's gone up. I think it's 50 now. I don't think it's 10 with
Yeah,
inflation.
exactly. But you know, you if you're open-minded enough, anytime you're on set, you can't help but absorb and learn and pick up, and it's so easy to help somebody else in that situation when they're nervous or when they're new. So I truly believe that, you know, the more you put out there to your fellow cast members and to your crew, et cetera, that the more it comes back. And it's so great when it does, you know,
Agreed.
when you need a helping hand, or when you need to run off to the bathroom and the AD's saying no, and you look at them, I did this for you, and then they rush you out to go to the bathroom. So it's a funny world we live in, really. It's a really funny world. I'd like to see a lot more female crews. I think you hit a very important part. Female crew members that are not 19 and just graduating from university or high school, you know?
Yeah, or just in other positions other than like, the female, the usual female roles, like the crap, like the hair and makeup and things like that. Continuity.
Continuity.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. What makes you feel powerful?
I think overcoming fears,
Mm-hmm.
be they creative ones or practical life ones, overcoming fears and facing them.
I like that.
You know, I've had many a times where I landed a gig and wondered what the fuck they were thinking. You know,
Yeah.
sorry if this swearing, wondering what they might have been thinking, giving me the part. It's like, and then the work begins, right?
Right. Yeah, and you overcome it.
So seeing it through, that makes me feel powerful. And in retrospect, you know, those fearful, those roles that make you shiver and fear, usually it's for a reason, right? It's for a reason, and you're gonna do some damn good work, you know,
Yes,
because you're being
yes.
challenged and pulled to the, yeah.
Yeah, the ones that scare you are the ones that you, what's that Sarah
Yeah.
Polley book, right? Turning towards or
Oh
running towards
yes.
the fear.
Yeah, that's right. We're running towards danger.
No,
What was it?
danger?
Fear?
I thought it was fear.
Fear. Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I read that too, yeah.
Yeah. What so we shone a light. I always try to take a little moment and shine a light onto another firecracker to sort of pass the light a
Sure.
little bit. We talked about your daughter Paloma and we talked about Jill. Is there anybody else that you want to just like shine a light on?
Deb McGrath.
Oh, come on. all day. I could talk to you all day.
Deb McGrath is just so lovely.
Right?
Yeah, like really lovely. Have you done a podcast with her? Seven.
She and Colin are friends of ours, but she's like one of my earlier podcast chats with Deb.
Oh, nice.
She sang songs and we talked about Second City and for days.
Oh, that's
I love her
lovely.
Forever.
Well, maybe it's time for an update on Deb.
Yes. McGrath. Right, because she's like writing and creating. Like she's made that film with Eric Peterson recently. And
right.
Yeah.
Heidi von Plesk.
Oh yeah.
She's a writer as well. She's a very talented woman and good vibes as well. And is a pro woman. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And we need more of those, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. I'm going to look Heidi up. I'm going to get more familiar with her work.
Great. Let her know I said hi.
I will. We'll pass this podcast. Hi to Heidi. My final question is your younger self. So the pre moving to Toronto from Ottawa, Maria DeMar, what advice would you have given your younger Maria?
Oh, don't be so paranoid. Don't be so hard on yourself. Don't. Yeah. There is no such thing as perfection, you know, there isn't. And different people learn things different ways. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. all. I carried that as a albatross around with me for a long time that I wasn't classically trained.
Of course. Yeah.
So I think that had a lot to do with the parts that I chose to do as well. The parts that came my way were always very serious, very wordy, very, you know, strong ass kicking women, because I didn't want to be thought of as a fluff. So that was a big deal. And then I started doing theater, and you know, I've had two plays at Tarragon, and it's like, wait a second, I like this too.
And now you're gonna do voice. It's like unstoppable.
Exactly. So
and goofy, I think the world needs a little bit more goofy. Goofy
Del
Mar.
God, I got lots. Yeah. Goofy Del Mar. That's me.
You're a treat. Thank you to Martha. Martha Chavez reached out to me and was like, what? She started giving me grief, which I love. And she was like, get Maria on your show. And I was like, you got it. Of course. Like, there's no question. It's been such a great chat.
That's so sweet.
You got a lot of fans. Like, you got like fans that don't know you and fans that like know the different layers of you. Like, there's a lot of people in your corner.
That's lovely to hear. It's lovely to hear. It's sometimes overwhelming to hear, but it's lovely to hear, you know.
Well, here's the thing. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
People just like you because of who you are. So just take a break. You don't need to like, there's no fan club. Nope. You don't need to make bobbleheads. Nothing needs to be done. You just need to be you.
Yay. That's good enough. Well, thank you. Thank you. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Naomi. What an absolute treat. I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Honor's mine.
And we'll talk about the show. I'm telling you.
I would love that. Okay. I would love that.
All right.
Okay.
We'll talk soon.
All right.
Bye.
Bye for now. And that's Maria Del Mar. Oh my gosh, I'm beaming. What an absolute gorgeous conversation. You're going to go to firecrackerdepartment.com for all our podcasts and our community events and our workshops and our mentorship programs. And then go back, listen to Deb McGrath's. Listen to Martha. Martha, I also chatted with Martha Chavez. Listen to all these folks and more, and then share them with folks so that we can like keep putting these stories out there. Firecrackerdepartment.com, Instagram, firecrackerdept. I'm Naomi Sneakus. I sure love my job, and I'm happy that you came and listened today, or watched, or both. I don't know how you're working, but I'm glad you're here. Thanks so much to the podcast team. We've got Pau Carranza, who's producing it with me. Jennifer Morose is our consulting producer. Jennifer Rowley is our head editor. And Jana O'Connor is assistant editor. Rebecca Gismani is our copywriter. Anna Morodin is our YouTube manager and video editor. Shout out to the Firecracker Department actioneers that make everything tick. Veronica Martin, Liesl Lafferty, Anita McFarlane, Pau Carranza, and Anna Morodin. For more information about Firecracker Department or to get involved in our community, go to www.firecrackerdepartment.com. And of course, find us on our socials at firecrackerdept. And don't forget to rate and review our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. to get these voices and these stories shared with more of the world. Thanks, everybody. Go on out there. Have a firecracker day. Hey, everyone. Something we've started recently is our very own Patreon page. You see, we wanted to find a way to get more in touch with you, our community. We wanted to have a way to actually have discussions online about the topics that are coming up through our workshops or through the podcast episodes. So we're sharing bonus episodes, discounts for our events, VIP Zoom chats with special guests, including special workshops where you get to actually have one-on-one discussions with some of the biggest and brightest minds in our industry. So go on over to patreon.com/firecrackerdept and why don't you join us? We'd love to have you.